Track 7, London Landmarks. There seems to be a never-ending list of wonderful buildings and monuments in our capital city for people to talk about. This time it's the turn of Lynn Featherstone to describe the magnificent edifice of Alexandra Palace, a building which has twice risen like a phoenix from the ashes.
Hello, I'm Lynn Featherstone, Liberal Democrat MP for Hornsey and Wood Green. And I've been the MP for Hornsey and Wood Green since 2005, but before that I was for 8 years a councillor, a local councillor on Haringey Council. So, it would be very hard for me not to choose Alexandra Palace, a splendid, mysterious palace on top of the hill right in the middle of my constituency. Growing up here knowing that you had a palace named after a princess, it's an iconic, magical palace, the place I used to go skating, the birthplace of TV, and a building that has burned down twice and has twice risen from the ashes. The palace is enormous, nearly 300 metres across, and it's surrounded by a steeply sloping park. It's made of pale yellow brick with circular patterns picked out in orange. First opened in 1873, it was known as the People's Palace, intended for public recreation. In true Victorian style, the architect, John Johnson, realised that vision on a grand scale. The design borrows from classical architecture. There's a central facade, some 50 metres high, with a huge rose window set into a recessed arch and a triangular roof. To either side of the rose, there are blanked arched windows with panels painted onto them in blue outlines, and just beneath are four arches lined with orange brick. The palace is much wider than it is tall. At each end, there's a rectangular tower. The main entrances to the building are positioned on the sides. The right tower has a TV aerial sticking out of the top, a four-sided metal structure a bit like a mini Eiffel Tower, with a long straight aerial shooting out of the top. And this dates from 1935, when the BBC leased the Eastern Wing and transmitted the first ever TV signals from here. It still transmits signals today. Both East and West Towers are joined to the central facade by long galleries, like two layers of cloisters, one on top of the other. On the west side, the top gallery forms a covered walkway, and the arches are opened out onto the elements. It is crying out for a restaurant to be put there with the finest views of London. Set further back, there's the glass roof of the Palm Court, a tiled court with fully grown palm trees inside. And on the east side, there's a building immediately behind the arches, housing an ice rink. The design might sound imposing, like a cathedral perhaps, but the colourful brickwork and bright blue window frames tell us what this place is really all about – pleasure. At the peak of the triangular roof, there's a person-sized statue of a winged angel carved in grey stone. She's holding a laurel wreath, and at her feet there's a fat sheath of corn and a horn of plenty. Loosely based on Ceres, she represents fruitfulness and the good life. She has one arm raised in the air, finger pointed, as if she's just stepped out of one of the raves that they now hold downstairs. A wide viewing platform spans the palace, made of yellow brick and edged with blue railings. Two sets of steps lead up from a road that runs along the front of the building, one set on the left and one on the right. I can imagine Victorian Londoners climbing the wide steps to promenade in front of the galleries and taking the views of the whole city. Today, it's the skyscrapers of Canary Wharf and the new tapering glass construction, the Shard, that grab your attention. The park slopes down in front of you, full of people picnicking, walking their dogs, playing sport, anything they want. Ali Pali, as it is widely known, is used for all kinds of events, gigs, the Christmas arts fair, and my particular favourite, the knitting and stitching show, although since I became an MP, my last jumper took 7 years to knit. These all take place in the beautiful halls that lie behind the facade. The Great Hall is on the other side of the rose window, a huge space, 100 metres long and 50 metres wide. Its high glass roof curves like a barrel. From the outside, the rose window is muted metallic blue like mother of pearl, split into angular geometric panes. But from inside the hall, it shows a 10-pointed star in bright blue and yellow. The history of Alexandra Palace hasn't all been one of elegant Victorian leisure pursuits. It is rather more checkered, as the other side of the building suggests. The entire north face is in disrepair, shut off to the public, stained black with smoke, its windows grey and boarded up. Just 16 days after opening, the palace was all but destroyed by a fire, leaving only the exterior shell in place. It was swiftly rebuilt and reopened in 1875. During the First World War, the palace became an internment camp for German prisoners. A plaque commemorating this is displayed near the Eastern Tower. Later, in World War II, the TV aerial was used to jam the navigation systems of German bombers. In 1980, sadly, a second major fire destroyed half of the building, and this is the damage that remains today. Hidden in the disused parts of the building, there is a theatre, with some of its Victorian stage machinery preserved, and at the moment it can only be accessed on special open days. The palace is a glittering, splendid place that dominates the view for miles around, but also a run-down building desperate to be restored and used. It can't stand still. A consultation has just been held to find out how it can best be enjoyed by people today, and plans are afoot to bring the whole place back to its former glory.
We thank Lynn for her description of that iconic building. And Lynn is now a Liberal Democrat peer in the House of Lords, having taken the title Baroness Featherstone of Highgate.